This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Tech Talk, and my name is Jeff Sandhu. Malaysian leaders, policymakers, and business leaders will soon, if not already, have to grapple with the reality that it's not only about preparing our workforce for the future, but also ensuring the right policy actions are undertaken to transition our economy in the age of disruption. The age of AI is upon us, and we now have a digital responsibility, and also the future of work discussion has to start now. And with me today to discuss what the new Malaysia, or Malaysia Baharu, can do as we embrace AI is...
Hi Jeff, my name's Steve Brame. I'm the Vice President of Government Affairs for IBM in Asia Pacific. And I look after all of our policy engagements across the region.
Jeff, my name's David Barnes. I'm Vice President of Global Workforce Policy for IBM. I lead IBM's advocacy on workforce issues around the world, like the future of work.
Cool. Now, it's not rocket science to see, you know, that the world's changing, but I guess where... it's surprising to us is just the pace of change that we're seeing with the technology that's coming in, disruptors, the rise of, you know, gig economy, the amount of startups that are, you know, booming up in the space. But it seems like the policy and regulation side is not really keeping up to speed with that, though. Just give us an update a little bit about what's happening in the policy and regulation sides globally itself.
Sure, Jeff. I mean, you're right about the speed. I mean, I've been in the industry 25 years. I've never seen anything like it. And governments are always laggards when it comes to catching up with what's happened in a technology space. But this certainly is different. And what I'm seeing across the region is governments are getting bits of what's going on. I mean, some governments understand the rise of artificial intelligence and its application. Others, you know, are feeling the pressures around data and free flow of data and using their own industry policies to try and capture data centers. And, you know, there's obviously concerns around cybersecurity and privacy. Mm. Governments, I think, in the region are getting bits of the equation. I think IBM and other IT companies see the whole picture. And they really see, you know, the emergence of data as a new natural resource, one that holds tremendous value for our clients. And as you said, really, you know, it's separating the disruptors and the non-disruptors is the knowledge they gain from data. But yes, you're right. I think governments are a little behind in what's happened, and you know, we're working with governments around the region and the world to provide our perspective on what's happening and the policy frameworks we think are going to be optimal for growth.
And also we see countries like China, I guess, of, you know, just emerge over the past 10 years or so when it comes to new technologies, AI in that sense, and you know how they've leapfrogged, and a lot of emerging markets within the region, they seem to be leapfrogging around. And it's because of the hunger that they have, and it's the passion and the desire to actually, you know, grow further in this open world that we sort of, you know, live in that sense.
I think you're seeing from China, there's a lot of very innovative companies out there, and they have spread their wings across ASEAN. And we work with a lot of these companies in China. You know, I don't think it's a surprise with the speed and the growth that the Chinese economy has maintained over 25 years. It's been double digit all the way, that you're going to have a lot of these companies stepping forward. Are they all at the leading edge of technological development? I think the answer is no, particularly in the AI space. You know, there's some great innovative companies out there, but, you know, there are differing stages of development and skill.
Now, you also mentioned about data being the fuel of technology today itself, and GDPR is something that, you know, came about, I think earlier this year it's been enforced already, or somewhere within last year or so. And a lot of talk or a debate that's going on about, you know, whether it's actually helping you know, companies to sort of be more protected with the cybersecurity space that you talked about, or is it actually a hindrance for, you know, growth of new ways of using data for you know, business efficiency or just growth within the business itself?
Well, I'd start by saying, you know, at IBM we comply with policy regulations wherever they're implemented. You know, we work with government of the days. We comply with the regulations that are at hand. And GDPR is no different. It was born from a European context, a social and economic, social and cultural context that really places individual privacy and privacy rights at the core of the debate. And IBM has a global training program to make sure we're fully compliant with that. You know, we've digested the legislation, we've implemented it, we know what we're dealing with, and we move forward. You know, I mean, David can talk more about, you know, the privacy regime in the United States, which comes much more from a commercial starting point. So, you know, different societies are going to put in place their own privacy regimes based on their starting point and the concerns that citizens have and other groups have. Our role, obviously, is to work with governments and citizens groups, you know, as we emerge, as we go through these developing technologies, to make sure there's the right information, that there isn't hysteria or an over-exaggeration of downsides and so on and so forth. So the regulatory environment has a balanced debate. David, did you want to have a...
Yeah, look, I think it's fair to say where we are in the implementation of artificial intelligence is a bit like where we were in the implementation of e-commerce back in the Clinton administration. It's very early days, and we're kind of saying to governments to do no harm, stand back a little, let the private sector emerge, let the technology development, let the new jobs be created, before you, and don't jump in too quickly to regulate just yet.
Is that the is that a way of looking at it, to not hinder or not stifle some sort of innovation that comes up from this?
That's absolutely correct, Jeff, because where you impose regulations prematurely, then you'll tend to drive the innovators to go do their work in some other jurisdiction where they have more flexibility and they can pivot quickly with, you know, and change where they need to with the new technology.
Is there any examples of when a guideline becomes redundant or even worse, it stifles the competition?
Big concerns for IBM are around data retention and data localization guidelines. You know, there are countries around the world and some in ASEAN who have put in place, and they're starting to wind them back, put in place very restrictive guidelines on the free flow of data. You know, we've gone to these governments and said, well, hang on, you know the costs you're imposing here are enormous. And I was in one country that I won't name, but a very small health insurance provider basically said, if we have to comply with this regulation, it's going to cost us $10 million a year additional because we have to go and build a data center, house all the data in this particular country. We can't share data. We can't get insights from other, you know, patients around the region. So that's a great example. But if we go back to, you know, your question about governments and regulation and perhaps letting things flourish, I think the best example was the growth of the service industries and the IT service industries. And Malaysia was a great beneficiary of that when it took off, because it was, you know, Malaysia invested in, you know, the right infrastructure, you know, the right power settings, and the right skills, and the jobs and the industries came. Exactly the same in India. I think if any government had tried to mandate that we will have, you know, you must put X number of IT service professionals in the country, and they don't get the fundamentals right, it's just wasted regulation, and the industry won't come.
But the concern of having the data centers being local is valid to a certain degree because of, you know, the abuse of a certain data. Like Cambridge Analytica, for example, was a scandal that brought everyone, you know, stood up and took notice about, wow, the things that are being done, and then it's just... there's no fingers to point here, and like everyone's just go like, we don't know where how this happened.
I don't think where the data center was located would have had any impact on that particular issue. I once had a regulator say to me, you could unplug your server and take it to bed, and your data is no more safe there than it is in the cloud. If there's a bad actor around, a bad actor will find a way. And actually, a lot of data breaches and cybersecurity issues come from poorly trained staff, a bad actor within a company, people not following the right procedures in terms of the handling and the management of data. So that's not where the data center is located. That's got nothing to do with it. But you have, you know, emergence of new IT or IT based companies in the transport space and the health space, who really rely on the free flow of data. You know, data in the cloud, the understanding and allowing AI and analytics to give companies those understandings and competitive advantages. And if you can't get a complete data set, then really you're kind of tying one hand behind your back as a national economy.
We'll be right back with Steve Brame and also David Barnes of IBM talking about policies and its impact in the age of disruption. BFM 89.9.
Before Friday materializes, BFM 89.9.
And we're back with Steve Brame and David Barnes of IBM. Earlier on, we talked about the importance of policies in the age of disruption and if this actually is helping or it's a hindrance to innovations like IoT and AI. Gentlemen, is there a right time to set a new policy or regulation to help spur more innovations like, you know, as we mentioned, AI, IoT, and not stifle these kind of technological innovations?
Well, I think the first stage is for governments to truly understand and invest in understanding in what's going on. Now, as we said at the beginning, I mean, the speed at which this has happened has been phenomenal. There are a lot of governments out there who are investing in getting much deeper insights in what's going on. I would always argue that the best role for government is to have a close collaborative relationship with industry and those who know what's going on and focus on the fundamentals of what's needed in terms of skills and skills development and growth of employees, you know, the fundamental infrastructures, business linkages, all that sort of stuff. If there is obviously a flaw in the market that's causing some sort of, you know, serious damage or hurt, you know, governments obviously have a regulatory role to play and they need to come together and develop those regulations. But regulations developed in perhaps ignorance or developed out of consultation, I think, will always lead to a suboptimal outcome.
But also the workforce is changing. I think, David, that's where probably you could add on just, you know, how it has impacted just the future of work itself. You know, offices are changing. Policy seems to be changing within the office and also, you know, globally itself. Probably an update around what's happening with the workforce.
Jeff, yeah, it's really important. There's a lot of fear and uncertainty about the future of work because of artificial intelligence and robots and things. But we're really optimistic because about the future of jobs, because when you apply new technology, you get a productivity gain, and that flows into economic growth and therefore other new jobs, perhaps in different places to the old jobs. But nevertheless, the economy continues to grow. What is different is the kind of skills that we're looking for these days. We're looking for people with more soft skills, you know, presentation skills, communication, empathy, the ability to work on teams, you know, often global teams. And, you know, because technical qualifications can get out of date very quickly in a fast-moving technology environment, and that can always be retrained. So we're looking for new kinds of skills. And often we're finding that you don't really need a four-year college degree anymore to get a high-skilled job in high technology. I mean, we have jobs in cloud, cybersecurity, digital design, which we're hiring people for who've just got either, you know, good work experience or maybe a 2 years associate's degree, but they're adaptable and they're keen and they have a great aptitude for the job. So when we're hiring people, we're putting more emphasis on skills and aptitudes relative to formal qualification.
And the fear of AI taking over is minor.
Well, AI is going to come in at different speeds, in different places, at different times. It's going to affect different parts of the economy, different companies, different jobs, with different levels of intensity and, as I say, at different times. And so it's not going to be this big wave crashing down on employment all at once, because look, there are economic factors in trying to deploy AI which differ from industry to industry. There are cultural factors. Sometimes people don't want AI doing certain things, and there are technology factors. You know, it's not easy to implement. I mean, there are a lot of work needs to go into it. So, you know, we're optimistic. Change is going to happen. Eventually, 100% of jobs will be affected in some way. In other words, you might need a different set of skills to do some parts of your job. But we're going to have more jobs than before.
Mm. In terms of the changes in policies within the workforce itself, has that changed much?
No, there's been very little change. And this is what governments are grappling with. And that is how to encourage the kinds of skills that employers need to support the new jobs. And also, you know, what kind of regulations you need around employment. Because, you know, old-fashioned rules that kind of used to protect industrial manufacturing, like working time rules, well, they're not so relevant when you've got high-skilled workers who kind of work when they need to. Maybe they work on Saturday or Sunday instead of Thursday or Friday because that just suits them, and they've got to look after their aging mother on Thursday, kind of thing. And they want that life flexibility, and we allow our employees to have that. But anywhere where you've got rigid rules is going to kind of deter investment in these new kinds of jobs.
So what are some of the considerations that a government should consider or should take when they're trying to update a new policy or even just create a new legislation, for example?
As I said, I think they've got to be doing it in consultation. They also, I think, should be thinking about what's happening around their own backyard. I think if a government veers one way when the rest of the group are going in another way, it's going to be catastrophic for that particular economy and its growth. But you know, it does, as David said, I think it comes down to skills. It always comes down to skills. If you've got the right skills and you've got the right level of investment in your people, then you probably don't need to overinvest in certain regulatory elements. The industry will grow and there'll be balanced development.
Can policy actually help to spur, you know, skill more people with certain skills that we need?
Yes, it can. I mean, governments can act as catalysts for much deeper and broader partnerships between business or employers and educators, because one of the reasons why we have a mismatch of what employers need versus what the education systems produce is that educators and employers don't work closely enough together to create advanced curriculum for the new kinds of jobs.
But like you said, you know, a four-year degree now, you know, it's not the primary reason for you to get a high-paying job or a high-skilled job. Some would even learn off, you know, from the internet itself or from YouTube and stuff. And 4 years, you know, chasing a degree, by the time you get out of it, it may not be relevant at all, looking at the pace of change that we have.
Yes, you're absolutely right. But, you know, governments can act as a catalyst with incentives, incentives for the institutions to work with employers. They can provide assistance for individual workers to retrain and reskill. You know, IBM spends $500 million a year on learning and training for our employees, but not all employers can do that. So some employers would benefit from government assistance to run training programs for their employees, right? So there is definitely a role for government to kind of shape behavior in the quest for continuous learning here.
Well, I was just going to add, I also think there's a very fundamental role for government and industry together, which is to make sure they demystify a lot of what's going on around AI. You know, you often hear, you know, horror stories and this is going to change the world and everyone's going to be out of a job and so on and so forth.
It's the hype curve.
There isn't going to be a cataclysmic event at the end of the day. And as a matter of fact, you know, the great benefits that a lot of AI is leading to, particularly in healthcare and cancer diagnosis and distributed learning and education and AI for farmers and weather prediction and aviation, a lot of that gets muddied in the debate around, you know, the robots and building cars and we've got to tax robots and it's all – the world's coming to an end. I think governments and industry need to hold hands and make sure the debate is done in a very sound way and we emphasize the great fundamental social and economic benefits that AI is going to bring across industries.
So what I'm hearing now so far is that one is my job is still safe. AI won't really, you know, just one day decide to eliminate everyone in the workforce, but we need to be prepared and policies can actually help preparing even soft skills as well, and governments need to start talking with the industries.
Yes, that's a really good summation, Jeff. And what I would also suggest that governments need to be doing in concert with employers is figuring out programs which help workers transition from one job into a new job. Because, you know, we're starting to be able to identify what kinds of jobs might be, you know, affected by AI or by robots or automation. And so we've got time to figure out how to transition those groups of employees to new jobs before they fall into unemployment. In other words, we've got time to prepare, so that's what we should be doing.
But instead of waiting for, you know, a government to impose a policy, what can actually the private sector, or even just the traditional public sectors, the ones that are, you know, working in the banking sector, the healthcare sector, these are large sectors with, you know, huge numbers of employees within the region. What can they do to at least help to push this forward?
Well, I can tell you what we're doing, and that is we are enabling our employees to keep upgrading their skills. We recommend to them which skills are important and which skills are going to be important for the future. So we create priorities to help them better keep a place in the workforce. And we're also giving employees creating much greater transparency as to what are the hot skills, what are the hot jobs, how they can transition to those jobs, you know, what programs are available for them. And how their skill profile looks against what's happening, right? What's going to be needed in the future. So we can give them a heads up that, you know, they really need to start thinking about repositioning themselves. You know, we're also running some pilots on helping employees transition to jobs outside IBM if that's going to be a better use of their talents. Mm. So and as we are using artificial intelligence and predictive analytics to support that kind of analysis. So we're using the technology to help workers transition into new places.
And also, I guess, you know, finally, just to wrap up the interview, what would you say if a policy was in place and that actually stifles, how would one backtrack from this? Like, would this be a big issue? We've seen in Malaysia, we have the, you know, anti-fake news law, which is now being discussed in the parliament and stuff. And we know globally, fake news is something that, you know, we're still trying to tackle, but it's been trying to tackle on a policy level. And is this something that a policy can actually help to, you know, encourage better users for, you know, the tools that we get within the internet? And, you know, what if something actually stifles? Is it difficult then to roll back into?
Well, just like we hope Watson never takes your job. We hope Watson never takes the job of fabulous government affairs professionals like ourselves. So it's a legitimate question, though, because we are always talking to governments about the impact of certain policies that were unintended by the policy or, you know, really are stifling the industry. And, you know, it is our job to work with governments to build the evidence, show the case, gather the data, build the coalition, go to the governments and say, hey, listen, this policy you thought was going to do the right thing, and da-da-da, yeah, it might be protecting a small number of people, but its impact is much larger. Mm. So, you know, we work at this, you know, all the time. You know, we have preventive conversations with governments on you shouldn't put this policy in place because it's going to be detrimental, and they drop the policies. We have conversations where policies are halfway through the baking process and we can demonstrate why there's better global approaches to this. And we have conversations that say, listen, this particular policy is not working. It's always incumbent on us. You can't go to a government and say this policy is working, remove it, thank you very much. You always need to go and tell them why it's not working and offer a viable solution. Mm. And that's what we do, and we have colleagues in the industry and in other companies that do this day in, day out.
Well, I guess policy and regulations isn't a bad thing after all. It could actually be a good thing, and it could actually spur more innovations within the region and help a country's economy as well. Gentlemen, thank you very much, and I hope to bring you back in again probably in a year's time to see what are some of the updates that's happened within the workforce and also within the sectors as well. Thank you.
Thanks Jeff.
That was Steve Brame and also David Barnes of IBM talking about how policies play a crucial role in helping innovations like IoT and AI in the age of disruption, and why it's important to start having this discussion now as we move into the future of work. If you missed any parts of this show, you could download the podcast. It's available on the BFM website and the BFM app. My name is Jeff Sandhu. This has been Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.